Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. I'm Senator Mia Costello, and with me this afternoon is Senator Gardner. Welcome. Welcome, Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Senator Meyer.
Hello, thank you.
Senator Machicki, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And Senator Stevens, welcome.
Thank you.
It's 1:34 in the afternoon, and our recording secretary is Carrie. Appreciate you being here. And also, Leah is our LIO operator. So this afternoon we have four bills on the agenda, and the first one is House Bill 86 that was introduced by Representative Clayman, who's here with Siri Godinez. Welcome. And if you want to just briefly mention your bill again, I'll be looking to see if there's any questions from the committee. And also wanted to mention to the committee that Stephanie Butler's online. She is the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and she's available in case we have any questions. So with that, Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again for hearing this bill today. I'm Matt Clayman. I'm the House Representative for House District 21. House Bill 86 repeals current statutes that allow the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to threaten non-renewal of occupational licenses for individuals who have defaulted on their student loans. In the past, those who have had their licenses revoked have often left the state, setting up practice elsewhere. In these cases, the state loses not only the ability to collect, but also a skilled member of the Alaska workforce. The ACPE has not exercised this authority since 2010, as wage garnishment has proven much more effective and much more useful for collecting outstanding loans. For these reasons, it makes sense to eliminate this overly punitive and ultimately ineffective method of student loan debt collection. Thank you very much for hearing House Bill 86. And with that, Madam Chair, we're happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Are there any questions from committee members for the bill sponsor or for the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education? Okay, seeing none, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 80, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection from moving House Bill 80, Version Alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note? Seeing none, so moved. Thank you, Representative Clayman, and your aide. And we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the documents.
Thank you very
much. Order. I actually read the wrong bill number. So we'll just have to go through that little exercise, I guess, where we move it. Senator Meyer.
Okay. All right, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to retract the previous motion and move that we move House Bill 86, Version A, from committee with individual committee recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection from the committee members for moving House Bill 86, Version Alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes? Okay, seeing none, so moved. And we will, again, take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Next, we have Senate Bill 205, which is an act relating to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and relating to telecommunications regulations, exemptions, charges, and rates. And we actually do have a committee substitute for this bill, so I would invite Senator Meyer to move move the committee substitute.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move committee substitutes Senate Bill 205, Version D, forward for discussion.
Okay, and I'll object just to hear the changes. And I would like to invite my labor and commerce aide, Natasha McClanahan, to go through the changes, and then your staff, Edra Moreland, is here to answer any questions or provide any additional information for the committee of, on the committee substitute. So thank you, Natasha.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today to walk through the explanation of changes for CS Senate Bill 205, Labor and Commerce, Telecommunications Regulation and Exemptions, and this is the changes from version A to D. Section 5 was removed due to an open docket with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, which is R18-001, in relation to exchange access charges and the administration of those charges. The reference to AS4205850 in Section 7 was also removed due to the open docket with the RCA, and also sections were renumbered accordingly.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I did also want to mention for committee members that we've opened and closed public testimony on this bill, but we do have, in addition to your aide, Senator Meyer, we have Christine O'Connor and also Tyson Gallagher with GCI is here. We also have Commissioner Stephen McAlpine with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, who's online, and James Jackson. So if there's any questions, please feel free to direct them to those individuals. Welcome, Edra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Edra Moreland, staff to Senator Meyer. excuse me. I don't have any additional information. It was a relatively minor change to the CS, which was just removing Section 5. Section 5 in the new bill is now the definitions section.
Thank you. Edra, so by removing those sections because there's an open docket, will the legislature see portions of the bill come back before us at all, or does that need to be addressed in the future?
Madam Chair, for the record, Edra Moreland again. I don't believe that that will need to be readdressed in the future. I think that the commissioner online could probably speak to the open docket and what they may anticipate happening with that and what the repercussions would be should depending on how it's resolved.
Commissioner McAlpine, are you interested in replying to that question of mine?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, this is Stephen McAlpine. The matters before the commission are dealt with in public hearings, and so we don't, as appearing here before you today, we don't speak for the commission. There's two of us here. There's a reason there's not three or more is that that constitutes a quorum, and we don't deal with matters that are to be taken up publicly in closed doors with a quorum present. So the answer to the question is I can't answer that until we've had our public hearing, which is scheduled for next Wednesday. Whether a matter comes back before the legislature is dependent upon who may feel offended by the outcome of our work. As you know from the outcome sometimes of your work, affected parties will come back and perhaps a change, a statutory change, or even come back before us and seek regulatory changes. But the regulation itself is dealt with in public, and we typically conduct several public meetings and also invite comment from interested parties.
Thank you. Christine, are you interested in coming forward and putting your name on the record? Thank you. And then Senator Gardner also has a question. So, welcome, Christine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Christine O'Connor, and I am Executive Director of Alaska Telecom Association. And I believe the question was whether Section 5 and the corresponding change to the prior Section 7 would be brought back to the legislature depending on the outcome of the docket. I don't expect that. We are working with the Regulatory Commission through docket R18001 to create a new version and updates to the Alaska Universal Service Fund, and so this change will naturally be involved in the resolution there. And we've
okay. Thank you very much, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have a question for Commissioner McAlpine and also for Ms. O'Connor. So we'll start with Commissioner McAlpine, and my question is: does the RCA have any concerns about this legislation, or has the RCA taken a position?
Are you speaking specifically to SB 205?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, I can say that the RCA has done a preliminary analysis of the bill, and the little 1.5 page bill does a tremendous amount of change. Some of them that significantly alter the way we do business at the commission and significantly alter the relationship between ourselves and the telecommunications industry. I've heard it said that this bill has no effect whatsoever on the Alaska Universal Service Fund, and I think that upon the completion of our analysis, you will see that there are some significant changes being offered by this bill. And I would anticipate that the RCA will take a position after we've met, done our public meetings and met in quorum. We will take a position on the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
If I might follow up, can you tell me if you think that consumers will be better off or worse off with passage of this bill?
Well, there are, let me just give you a for example. I went and pulled my telephone bill, and I looked because I saw where there was a comment that it resulted in significant consumer changes to RCC payments. One of my telephone bills shows a 16-cent charge as opposed to the Alaska Universal Service Fund, where my bill shows a $4.87 charge, plus another $4 charge that's billed directly from the telephone company and collected by the telephone company. And then there's the federal universal service charge, which is an additional $3.04. If you kept track of those numbers, you can see that the Alaska Universal Service Fund in many instances surpassing that amount that's collected at the federal level. I believe at the last look we were collecting 19.1% of an individual's bill as the Alaska Universal Service Fund and 19% at the federal level. So we're actually one of the things that the regulation looks at is trying to gain control over the ever-increasing charge to the consumer on the Alaska Universal Service Fund. And one of the things we have to have is the ability to have, for instance, our staff has obligations under federal law. The statute that you see before you would cease the payment of the regulatory cost charges at 16 cents I talked about. As of June 30, I believe, 2019, we still have to maintain staff to perform the federal services as well as go through the types of things like we're going through with legislative matters, regulatory matters, that sort of thing. Our staff has been pared down from 5 to 2, and fortunately we have 2 of the best still on board, but getting rid of the RCCs, the regulatory cost charges, does not affect the amount of time, labor that these individuals are investing. It just eliminates the telephony industry from having to pay their share of that. In addition, the electric, water, sewer, garbage, all of the other utilities would have to pay to make up for that because it's basically pro rata on the amount of time we spend with the various industries. Those are just a couple of the things that are there, and I would imagine that after we've done a full detailed analysis as well as had some public meetings and some comments, we'll be able to better inform yourselves.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I think that works for me for right now. I'll look forward to your report when you've had a chance to complete your analysis.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner McAlpine, when do you anticipate having the public hearings and doing the analysis? When might we expect the results of both of those?
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Through the chair, we're having, you may note on the time frame of all of this, I don't know how long it took to draft the legislation, but we had to do our initial analysis in just 2 days. and we have staff working on it now. As a matter of fact, we've pulled someone from another section to work on it also. To answer your question directly, Senator, the first public meeting that we could bring this matter to the agenda is scheduled for next Wednesday, and I would imagine that some of the same individuals that you have there in the room with you are going to be there next Wednesday to assist in this. After that public meeting, I would anticipate that it would be a very short time before we could complete the analysis. So I would say that probably given it 10 days, probably by the following Monday, which would be the 19th.
Thank you, Mr. McAlpine. Commissioner McAlpine, I'm going to take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I was going to invite Christine O'Connor with the Alaska Telecom Association, if you wanted to at all reply to what we heard from Commissioner McAlpine.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just a couple of clarifications. One, that our bill does not change the statute 4205254 that authorizes the RCA to self-fund. And, in fact, our transition wasn't a year time to cut off the RCCs, but what that will do is allow an adjustment to assessment of actual cost, which is already in the statutes authorizing the RCA to collect their actual costs. We will be eliminating a lot of activity that the telecommunications industry is generating to the RCA, things like tariff filings, reports about long distance competition, and those type items that I described last time. So there should be a decrease. There definitely will be a decrease in activity. And during that transition time, we expected and are very supportive of a mechanism to assess actual costs per 4205-254.
Thank you. Are there further questions from committee members? Okay. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I had contact from a couple of people who were concerned and misunderstood the bill in the same way that I did. And I talked with Christine about them, about their concerns. One is a person who lives in Turnagain and values his landline and cannot get good cell phone reception in his home and worried about losing his landline. And another was a similar problem from somebody who lives up in Bear Valley up there. And so Christine was going to put on the record that they would not be in danger of losing their landline.
Yes, through the chair. Thank you, Senator Gardner. Very good questions. And an important misconception that I was very happy to address. Senate Bill 205 does not change the obligation to continue to provide landline service. We are not touching that obligation at all. That obligation exists through the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, which is 4205-261 and 271, which state very clearly a telecommunications company with a certificate granted by the commission may not discontinue service without RCA approval. It has happened in the past in certain situations where communities have shrunk to one or two people. A telecommunications utility has gone and requested permission to discontinue service, and the RCA conducts a very thorough investigation in the public interest. And again, we are not touching those provisions. There are also provisions in regulation at 3 AAC 52365, which prevent long distance carriers from discontinuing service without permission from the RCA. there's another layer of federal rules that require companies to ask permission. So landline service will not be discontinued. It's 48% of households continue to have landline service. It's an important service we provide, we're committed to. We're just trying to make the paperwork less expensive for us and for the RCA.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just so for the members of the committee, it's not my intention to slow this bill down. However, I do believe that in the interest of just the public process, that it'd be best if we just held the bill in the committee until we hear back from the public testimony from the RCA and get their position. And then as soon as we have that, we'll move that out. So thank you very much. And Senator Meyer.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Christine, can you describe this Alaska Universal Fund that we heard from Commissioner McAlpine, that there was some concern that we wouldn't get the money from that anymore? I don't quite understand that versus the RCC fund.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Meyer. The Alaska Universal Service Fund is funded through a surcharge on customer bills. And that fund supports the telecommunications networks in Alaska. It is distributed through the Alaska Universal Service Administrative Company, which is reports to the RCA. Those funds help to support voice service, broadband service, because the networks today support all services over the same network. There is the docket open at the RCA, docket R18001, looking at modernizing that. Due to the declining number of landlines, number of service that funds that bill, it's funded by an assessment on revenues, certain revenues, that surcharge has gone up to 19%. We find that to be unacceptable. It's too high. So we have filed a comprehensive proposal in the docket last Monday, setting a cap on that surcharge of 10%, so reducing it by almost half. Which will have an impact on companies' support for remote areas. However, we felt that was definitely something that needed to happen in the consumer interest. So that's the AUSF docket. It's not connected with this bill. The RCC charge is the regulatory cost charge that's allowed to the RCA under 4205-254, and it is much smaller.
Okay. And Madam Chair?
Senator Meyer.
So There's been some talk, too, that this bill would have a negative impact on rural households that had phone service. And then, of course, we heard from the commissioner that it could have an adverse impact on other utility companies. Do you have any thoughts or comments?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Meyer. I do. One, there will be no adverse effect on rural communities, and in fact, some of the companies that would benefit the most from more efficiency in not having to file filings that are characterized as unactionable, they would benefit the most, and they serve the rural areas. So any resources they save in this regulatory process, they would devote to operating their networks. Apologize, I forgot the second question.
Commissioner McAlpine had mentioned that this could or would have an adverse impact on other utility companies because the cost would have to shift.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that is not our intent. We fully expect to pay the cost of any continuing oversight and regulation of telecommunications industry. It will be much reduced, but should issues come to the commission related to telecommunication, whether the group as a whole or individual companies, that self-funding statute does allow the assessment of actual costs. And if I may, we are very flexible, and we've stated in my presentation to the RCA last Wednesday, we are open to proposals and suggestions. It is not our intent to disrupt the activities. We're trying to become more efficient for both industry and the regulatory commission.
Okay, Madam Chair?
Senator Meyer?
If I can just kind of summarize just from my own simple mind here. So there should be less activity for the RCA based on if this bill passes, but also there will be less revenue coming into the RCA. But the two, in your mind, should balance out? Is that fair?
Through the chair, yes, Senator Meyer. And that was also why we proposed the year-long extension of the effective date, to make sure that there was no disruption.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Christine. And I also have one final question for Commissioner McAlpine. Commissioner, will the RCA be using the testimony from this committee in your review of the impact of the bill?
The simple answer, Madam Chairman, is a definite yes. In fact, I'm looking around the room, the analysis is going on as we speak.
That's wonderful to hear. So we'll be watching you as you watch us, apparently. Senator Meyer, do you have any other questions you'd like to get answers on the record?
I can't think of any off the top of my head. I'd like to reach for a lifeline here with Edra. Is there any other questions that's come to our office that I'm not thinking of?
Excuse me. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, no, we haven't had any other questions, but I did just want to point out the fiscal note was prepared by the RCA on February 23rd. So I think perhaps they have been continuing their analysis of the bill since that time. So.
Thank you. And I will remove my objection to adopting the committee substitute. Is there any further objection to adopting a version Delta before the committee? Okay, seeing none, a version Delta has been adopted. I want to thank everyone for being here. And, Christine, if there's anything you'd like to provide to the committee in writing related to questions you heard today, please feel free. And we'll definitely distribute those. So, all right, we'll take a brief at ease as we get ready for the next bill. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Next before us, we have Senate Bill 62, which was introduced by Senator Wilson. We do have his staff here. Gary, welcome. Thank you for being here. And also the Labor and Commerce Committee aide, Natasha McClanahan, welcome. This bill does have a committee substitute, and if Senator Meyer would be interested in moving that before the committee.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 62, Version D, before the committee.
Is there any objection? I'll object just for the sake of discussion so that we can hear the changes. So, Natasha, if you want to walk us through the changes, and then we'll see if there's any questions from committee members.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natasha McClanahan, staff to Senator Costello. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to explain the changes to CS Senate Bill 62, Labor and Commerce. We're going to go from version A to D. Senate Bill 62, version A, would have repealed the Certificate of Need program for healthcare facilities. After three committee hearings in Senate Labor and Commerce, changes were made to the legislation based on conversations with stakeholders and input received during public testimony, resulting in the committee substitute. The committee substitute, Senate Bill 62, Version D, allows for an exemption from the Certificate of Need program if the new construction of a healthcare facility, alteration of bed capacity, or addition of a category of health services is in a location that is over 100 miles from another healthcare facility. This removes a barrier for remote communities that are currently struggling to attract and retain healthcare services in an effort to provide equal access to healthcare for all Alaskans.
Thank you very much, Natasha. I appreciate you walking us through the explanation of changes. I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the committee substitute. Is there any further objection to adopting that version? Okay, seeing none, version Delta has been adopted by the committee. And I wanted to mention that we do have Allison Laffin online with legislative legal available for any questions. If you have questions for Allison. Gary, would you like to comment on the committee substitute, perhaps provide any commentary on how it changes the scope of the bill from something quite I don't want to use the word disruptive, because disruptive technology could be a positive thing, but the bill was pretty large in its scope when it came to the committee, and now this version is really in response to the testimony we heard from Interior Alaskans about their inability to feel that they had access to health care that was within their community. And we heard stories of people having to drive over 100 miles. And so it's this committee's intention to address those issues. And just to let the committee know that this bill also does move on to the Senate Finance Committee, and I have actually spoken to the co-chair to let her know that it's possible that it will move out of committee today. So this is not the final committee referral, and I know it's a very it's a topic that Alaskans have discussed. It's been around for quite some time, but if you don't mind commenting.
No, not at all. For the record, Gary Zepp, staff to Senator David Wilson. Senator Wilson sends his regards, and I'm sure he wishes he was here. And as you mentioned, Madam Chair, the bill has kind of evolved, I'll say. And I think the evolution has been in the right direction for the folks of Delta in particular. And that was our original intent, is to allow communities to decide and remove the government barriers that are currently in place for a Certificate of Need program. Mm-hmm. And I think the folks of Delta are a perfect example of how this bill can help Alaskans. And so I think Senator Wilson would be very excited to know that it doesn't quite, even though it's not as broad base, it's still helping Alaskans provide health care services and facilities in their communities. So I think that's probably about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. I know one of the things we did also hear in testimony is that for some communities, the process of going through the Certificate of Need process they found was valuable. I do believe communities can still go through that process. Another point that I'd like to get on the record is that when we reached out to the Department of Health and Social Services, we did get information back about the applications they receive and what communities are paying. There was also a recognition that the regulations that currently surround the Certificate of Need program have not been updated in quite some time. And so it's also, as chair of this committee, my hope that as this version of the bill moves forward, that it sends a message to the department that perhaps updating those regulations might be helpful. And I look forward to the discussion that will happen, hopefully, in the Senate Finance Committee related to this issue, because I know it surrounds the cost of health care, and that is certainly something that we all care about. Whether or not this is the answer, I think remains to be seen. So with those comments, I just wanted to put that on the record also. Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wondered if we would be hearing from the Department of Health and Social Services on this committee substitute and also see updated fiscal notes.
So the department has, if my recollection is correct, has not come out with a position on the bill, and it's my understanding that they won't until it actually looks like it may pass. So that's my understanding. And Natasha, you could correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, I believe you're correct, Senator. And Natasha McClanahan, staff to Senator Costello, for the record, I believe that was provided in your backup documents for Senate Bill 62. It was a letter from Commissioner Davidson.
Thank you.
Any further questions from committee members? Senator Stevens?
Madam Chair, seems a little odd. I mean, the department needs to be here and needs to give us advice and to know how it's going to impact the department. And apparently what you're saying is that they're going to wait until it looks as if it's going to pass before they get involved in the process. That sounds a little backwards.
Senator, just my comment. Stevens, it seems that that's been the common comment from the administration on legislation, is that there hasn't been, unless it's the governor's introduced bill, but we could certainly reach out to the department and see if they have a position on this committee substitute.
Question for Department of Law.
Oh, yep. Allison Laughlin. Senator Machicki has a question for you. Go ahead, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I have, so the changes to 1807-031A adds the words in a location within 100 miles of another healthcare facility. Yet the applicability seems to require two parts, and that is located more than 100 miles from another healthcare facility and that has an existing certificate of need issued by the Department of Health and Social Services. When a certificate of need exists, does it remain in effect after the construction and during the operation of the healthcare facility, or at some point could it be essentially closed down after the project is complete, and would the applicability affect the outcome of Section 1? That's the general question.
Allison?
Madam Chair, this is Jean Michelle with Legal Services. Allison is replacing our drafting attorney. I'm the assistant revisor on this bill, so I'll answer Senator Maticki's question.
Okay.
If I may.
You.
Okay. So the applicability provision is essentially a hold harmless provision. The courts have found that certificates of need have some value, and they are construed as a property interest, and they do exist during the operation of the healthcare facility. They don't go away after construction. They're attached, they get renewed, they get modified over time.
Okay, and then I have one more brief question. The exact mileage of 100 is not covered. It seems like it's in a no man's land, which I know is strange. You have more than 100 miles in applicability, and you have within 100 miles, which is somewhat less than 100 miles in Section 1. Is that a potential problem, or the chances that it is exactly between 100 and 101 miles is rare, I admit, but is that a gap that we should clarify?
Through the chair, this is Jean Michelle again with Legal Services. So the way we interpret within 100 miles includes 100 miles, and more than 100 would be 101 or anything over 100 miles. So I don't see the gap.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any further questions of committee members? So it's my intention then to hold the bill until we have the Department of Health and Social Services provide an updated opinion on the topic. Natasha?
Senator Costello, I did want to make a correction. I believe the letter that we received came from Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services and not the Commissioner, although the inquiry did go through her.
So great. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll take a brief at ease as we get ready for the next bill, which is Senate Bill 112. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Next, we have before us a committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 112, and I would like to invite Senator Meyer to move the new version before the committee for the purposes of discussion.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 112 version L, / L as in lucky, before the committee for the purpose of discussion.
And I'll go ahead and object for the purpose of hearing the changes. And I have asked my aide, Natasha McClanahan, to provide information on the new version. And then Senator Giesel's aide, Kari Noor, is here to go through the sectional. So with that, welcome, Natasha.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natasha McClanahan, staff to Senator Costello, and I'm here to walk through the explanation of changes for the committee substitute for Senate Bill 112. Version R to L. And the changes were made based on conversations with stakeholders after public testimony at the initial hearing before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Version R removed the transferring of hearing duties from hearing officers to the Office of Administrative Hearings, Administrative Law Judges. The PDMP and controlled substance sections were revised to prevent possible HIPAA violations. Changes to the Workers' Compensation Board composition have been removed. Permanent total disability benefit termination has been removed. Permanent partial impairment benefit termination and lump sum payment sections have been removed. Temporary total disability benefit termination at 104 weeks has also been removed. The repeal and reenacting of the vocational rehabilitation program to a voucher system has been removed. Reference to an employer choosing a physician has been removed. And reporting duties of the Medical Services Review Committee have been removed.
Thank you very much. And Kari, if you would now walk us through an explanation of the bill before us.
Of course, Madam Chair, Senator Giesel sends her regards for not being able to be here. She was called away to an emergency. So before you, this is the sectional analysis for Senate Bill 112, Version L. Section 1 amends AS 2310-620 by adding a new subsection to allow an employer to require an employee to undergo drug testing if the employee has been prescribed a controlled substance under AS 2330-096. Section 2 repeals and reenacts AS 2330-0110A to provide that a compensable injury must be established using relevant objective medical evidence and must be the major contributing cause of any resulting condition, disability, or need for medical treatment, and provides that subjective complaints must be confirmed by physical examination or diagnostic testing. Section 3 amends AS 2330-095A.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm going to take just a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We are going through the sectional from staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. Kari Noor.
Again, for the record, Kari Noor, staff to Senator Giesel. We are on Section 3 of the new Version L. This amends AS 2330-095A. To require that the employer furnish medical treatment in accordance with evidence-based treatment guidelines, allows employer or insurer to request a third party to conduct a utilization review for treatment recommended outside of the evidence-based treatment guidelines, provides that if medical treatment is recommended 2 years after the date of injury, the employee may not be afforded the presumption of compensability, but that the injured will have a right to review by the board. Section 4 amends AS 2330-095D to allow for suspension of compensation for refusal of appropriate diagnostic tests. Section 5 amends AS 2330-095E to require in certain circumstances submission to examination by a mental health provider. Section 6 amends AS 2330-095O to require palliative care after medical stability to be consistent with evidence-based treatment guidelines. Section 7 amends AS 2330-095 by adding new subsections relating to payment for durable medical equipment, prosthetics, orthotics, or supplies and prescription drugs. Section 8 amends AS 2330 by adding AS 2330-096 relating to prescribing or dispensing controlled substances to employees. Section 9 amends AS 2330-097D to state that payment for medical treatment is not due immediately or on demand. It is due within 30 days after the employer receives the provider's bill and a completed report. Section 10 amends AS 2330-097G to add that an employer shall reimburse an employee's prescription charges within 30 days after the employer receives the employee's request for reimbursement. Section 11 amends AS 2330-105A to replace the term disability. Section 12 amends AS 2330-107B to remove a reference related to the second independent medical exam. Section 13 amends AS 2330-110E to allow for electronic submission of the acceptance or rejection of a claim. Section 14 amends AS 2330-120A to require that an employee establish a preliminary link between employment and resulting condition, disability, or need for medical treatment through objective relevant medical evidence before being afforded the presumptions listed in that subsection. Section 15 amends AS 2330-120 by adding new subsections relating to establishing the preliminary link and presumption under AS 2330-120A. Section 16 amends AS 2330-122 by adding new subsections relating to medical expert and lay testimony. Section 17 repeals and reenacts AS 2330-145, governing the award and payment of attorney's fees. Section 18 amends AS 2330-155M to repeal the $1,000 civil penalty when an annual report is incomplete when filed. Section 19 amends AS 2330-230A to provide a definition of independent contractor. Sections 20 and 21 amend the definitions of arising out of and in the course of employment and attending physician. Section 22 repeals AS 2330-095K relating to a second independent medical evaluation, 2330-110G relating to a submission to a physical examination, 2330-135A relating to a procedure before the board, 2330-155H relating to the board's authority, and Section 23 adds an applicability provision that states that Sections 2 through 22 of this Act apply to claims for injuries filed on or after the effective dates of those sections.
Thank you, Kari. I appreciate you bringing the new version before the committee, and it's my intention to hold the bill, give members a chance to review it with their staff, and if you have any questions, to please provide those to my aide, Natasha. And I want to pass on to Senator Geisel that we will certainly be passing on any questions to her that we receive so that there's an adequate review of the new committee bill. And with that, Kari, was there anything you wanted to comment on about this version that you would like the committee members to know?
I don't believe so, Madam Chair. This was just what we felt was the best after hearing all of the public testimony and the concerns that were brought forward.
Great. Thank you very much. So with that, we will be holding this bill. I will remove my objection to adopting version Lima. And with that, wanted to mention that our next meeting will be on Tuesday at 1:30 in the this room, in the Belts room. And also my staff is sending around a survey to see what other times might make sense for committee members to have a third weekly meeting. So please look for that email or let me know what might work for you. And with that, the committee is adjourned.